welcome to season 18 of the Follow My Lead podcast, where each week I bring you stories and best practices of today's leaders to help you on your leadership journey. My name is John Eads. Here we go. Welcome back. Season 18 moving right along. I'm so excited you're here this week. Your continued commitment to yourself and to your development from a leadership perspective is excellent. I'm so thrilled to be a part of it. This week's featured conversation is with a man that's made a really big impact on me, Father Mike Schmitz. You spell his last name S-C-H-M-I-T-Z. He's the founder of Bulldog Catholic. He has a very popular podcast on iTunes. You can just search Father Mike Schmitz. He is just phenomenal. His ability to transfer stories and ideas and messages is just fantastic. He's a very wise man, and he shares some of that wisdom with you and me today, and I can't wait for you to hear it. We talk in detail about what the primary mission of a leader is, and it was just fantastic. He talked about why it's so important that you're ruthless with your environment, and he gives some specific details. I can't wait for you to learn from Father Mike. Check him out if you haven't already. iTunes, Facebook, just incredible guy. Can't wait for you to hear from him. Without further ado, here's my interesting conversation with my friend, Father Mike Schmitz.
Father Mike, thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you're having me.
After years of teaching other people about leadership, I've come to the conclusion that leadership is really hard.
That's a solid conclusion.
And many people in positions of leadership are falling short. And you said something recently. You gave two pieces of advice for people, for anyone, not just in positions of leadership, but for anybody that's falling short. You gave two pieces of advice. And the first was to be patient. Mm-hmm. And the second was to be ruthless with your environment. What do you mean by being ruthless with your environment?
Yeah, I'm glad you focused in on that. That is what it means, I think, as it pertains to culture. So like, say, a business's culture or an organization's culture. Who is it? Was it Peter Drucker who said culture eats strategy for breakfast?
It was, yeah.
So that's the kind of the idea is I can have all the willpower I want. I can have all the good intentions I want. I can have all the great strategies for like overcoming a personal deficiency or for overcoming an organizational deficiency. And I can have a good plan. As I said, we're really committed to this and I'm a disciplined person. At some point, discipline runs out, you know, as all the studies point to, you can grow willpower, but at some point it's finite and you run out of willpower. And so the question is, can I set up my environment so that when I run out of willpower, the kind of culture that I wanted to create stays intact? Like, that, can I set up my environment so that when I don't feel like it anymore, or when the people around me don't feel like it anymore, or when, you know, it's not our best day, but it's our worst day, that the environment helps us accomplish our goals? And so that sense of saying, if to be ruthless with one's environment, it means asking the question, okay, what is there that I've allowed in this environment that cannot be there? And I think a lot of times we tolerate things because we think, well, no, I mean, they're fine. And they might be fine on our best days, but it turns out that they are deadly on our worst days or even on average day. And so that's what I mean by that notion of like, be patient with yourself. Yeah. So like, you know, you're going to fall, you're going to fail, you're going to have to get back up again. But if you're not also ruthless with your environment, those things, those like just whether they be soul crushers, you know, the people that we haven't had that conversation with, or the things in our
space. We consume. Yeah, I mean, it can even be what we consume.
Absolutely.
What are some things that you've done personally to be ruthless with your environment?
Yeah, that is a good question. Have you heard of Typeinator?
I have not, no.
It's basically a text expander app. And And so what, one of the things I had to do is I realized I was spending massive amounts of time in correspondence with people that I don't know, with people that I'll never have any contact with, or other than this email. But I'm devoting a lot of time that I should be spending with our students, or I should be spending on strategizing how are we going to move forward with our organization, you know, on campus. And so I was like, okay, so I can't do this anymore. I can't just keep doing this. And so I had to set time aside and say, I'm going to have a number of, I guess you might say formulated responses or like
templates.
Yeah, yeah. I guess. Yeah. And I always try to customize them and stuff, but it's a way that I can try to be present to people who, that I'm not primarily assigned to, mm-hmm. like I'm assigned to the for the people here in the diocese and the people here on campus. At the same time, not take away a lot of time from the students that I am assigned to. And so trying to be present to both. So what I had to do was like, okay, and I only answer those at this hour of the day.
Mm. So that's kind an of example. Yeah, so you use it with your scheduling.
Scheduling, yeah.
Let's talk about that. You bring up an interesting point. I've been thinking about it a lot. You're one of the most popular priests in the country. I mean, if that's even like a thing.
That's a great idea. Yeah,
if there was a thing, if there was a top five list of priests in popularity, or even just spiritual persons, not necessarily Catholic, you would probably be pretty high on the list. So interesting about what you've done with new media and spreading the message and spreading your ideas is so important today because so many people are online. But traditionally, priests and spiritual directors, it's in a small group setting. It's in a It's in a community. It's serving a parish. It's serving a church. How do you balance what you've kind of become in the internet and then serving your local community, which is something you're called to do?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think one thing as far as I don't want to ever confuse popularity with success or with even worse, holiness. Some people, I mean, that's a kind of regular thing where people will ascribe to another. Like, you know, I say, for example, I taught a thing and someone was really moved by it. Great, that's wonderful. But then they'll automatically think that I'm holy. And I'm like, okay, gosh, those are two very different things. And I have a long way to go and I'm still a work in progress and thanks be to God. Like I need to work on this. But I think there's that sense of popularity versus even success. So how do I measure success? And it's to get around kind of a long way around to try to answer your question.
I'd love to learn how you define success. So let's go there.
We'll see about that. But a couple of years ago, there was one of our students who said, "Hey, Father, can I ask you a question?" I said, "Yeah, sure. Go ahead. She said, "Do you think it's time maybe that you know kind of move on, that you shouldn't be on campus anymore?" And I was like, "Oh, well, why do you ask?" And she said, "Well, I don't know. You're just traveling so much that I don't know if you have time for us anymore." And it was like, oh, ouch, like dagger to the heart. I'm like, oh, really? At that point, I was saying no to about, you know, 100. I was saying no to 99 out of 100 invitations to leave. At that point, I was like, okay, I got to ramp this up. I have to be even more ruthless with saying no to things that take me away from this primary mission. And that primary mission ultimately is whether someone's, well, here's how Catholics view the priesthood is that it's primarily fatherhood. It's primarily spiritual fatherhood. And particularly on campus with a bunch of young adults, my primary mission is to be present as dad, like be present as a spiritual dad. And so I thought like, no, I'm taking care of this stuff. Kind of like how many dads are like, no, I'm doing the things. I'm showing up, I'm doing work. You know, we played catch a bit, but the students your children are saying, but I just want your time. Like, I just really want your attention when I'm here, when I'm around. And so that really recalibrated for me. Okay, what's the primary mission? And the primary mission is always going to be, how can I be a spiritual father to the people that the bishop has assigned to me in this diocese? Then aside from that, like you mentioned, like the social media stuff, is then everything outside of that primary mission goes to, all right, so how can I take what I've been teaching our students and trying to help them to navigate life's waters, you know, and to just sit in my living room and make a video about it, or or translate that into a book, or translate that into, you know, a podcast, so that if this is helpful for our students, I'm guessing it's going to be helpful for someone else. And that's been kind of the I think that's been one of the signs of fruitfulness, is the more and more I get direction from our students and from what they are needing, and then I translate that into something that I can, I don't know, package, but like, you know, distribute on social media, use, that those are often the things that are most, that most resonate with people online.
Well, you bring, you just bring up a really interesting point, your primary mission. What's the primary mission of a leader?
Man, you know, the main thing, I would think, you know, that main thing is to keep the main thing. So what's the primary? What is the main thing? Well, how do I raise up the people around me? I mean, I think that that's going to be, if a leader is some more than just the first person to get to the finish line, if a leader is more than just the person who just gets to tell everyone else what to do, and if a leader is more than just simply a strategist or the one who, you know, is looked to for guidance, but if the leader takes all of those goals or all of those roles and says, okay, how do I help the people that I'm leading achieve maximal success? And not just maximal success, maybe even in to accomplish this project, to accomplish this plan, but even maximal success in life. Because I'm sure we both have plenty of encounters with people who are very, very good at their job. They're very, very good at being that kind of leader, meaning they accomplish the task. They bring in the numbers. They have, like, they get across the finish line, but they do it at the expense of the people around them rather than to the benefit of the people around them. And so how can a leader say, okay, where is it we really want to go? How is it that I can really raise up the people around me, both professionally, but also personally? How can I take responsibility for their home life? But, you know, as you know, the leader sets the tone and he sets the pace, or he or she sets the pace. And so if there's no time for the leader's family, then yeah, the people who are being served by him or her, they won't have, we've already got the model.
Right.
There's no time for family. So how is it that the leader can help raise people around them as high as possible?
That primary mission of raising people up is such a clear thought for anybody in our audience. That is just an important point to bring out. The question then is, to bring it full circle, then they have to be ruthless with their environment to make sure that's their primary focus. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Because if you ask the question, it always gets out of hand. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's always going to be seasons where it's okay. There's not balance. But when I know that that's a season and not just that's what life is, when I know it's just a season where, okay, we have to have longer hours, whatever, but then we're going to have some time where we're not having this. Mm-hmm. Always going to be that kind of time, those seasons. But to be able to recognize, how is it that, what would really benefit this individual? And you know, I'm sure you've had experiences where it's like, okay, I'm trying to help this person. They're not doing what I'm asking them to do, or they're dropping the ball. And to be able to have the leader who can stop and ask the question, is there a reason why, other than incompetence? Because I think sometimes it's easy to just say, well, you're clearly not living up to what I've asked you to do because you just can't, or you're incapable, or you don't want to. Versus, let me stop and ask the question, tell me the story. And this, I've had to stop so many times. When I first got, you know, as a priest, we sometimes just get put in leadership positions without any qualifications, without any kind of, like, there's nothing I did to earn or deserve this position. It just was, hey, you're now the guy, go. And I'm like, oh man, so many mistakes. But one of the mistakes that I'm so grateful I've learned from is someone calls and says, well, I talked to so-and-so and they didn't do this and they didn't do this. They didn't do this. Someone who works with me.
Right.
And my first reaction was, what the heck? Are you kidding me? I'm so sorry. I'm so embarrassed. Let's get this person straightened out. Now it's, okay, we've gotten these calls before. I call up the other person and say, So tell me the story. And now they know, they can trust me that I'm going to have their back before I'm going to believe someone who just, you know, is a disgruntled parent or disgruntled, you know, vendor or whatever the thing is. Mm-hmm. Because I need to know the story first, because most likely what I heard from the other person is not the full story. And I think that has gone a long way as far as my own credibility with the people that I work with, because they know, okay, when it comes down to it, Father Mike will believe me.
He's going to have my back. Or,
yeah, exactly. I'll have their back. And also, I'm not going to just believe someone who says the first thing they say contrary or against one of the people I work with.
Yeah, and just having core values that are aligned to those kinds of things. There's a story about Herb Kelleher, the former CEO of Southwest Airlines. And, you know, one of their core values is fun. Funny, you know, saying for it. But one of their customers reached out to him and said that they were having too much fun. It went overboard and I didn't like it and I wanted to stop. And he responded with an email saying, "You can fly elsewhere."
Yeah.
You know, just because he was so intent on keeping his core values the same in his organization. And he knew if he reprimanded one employee for having too much fun, it ruins the core value altogether. And it shows a little bit of your growth from a leadership perspective to see that you're now asking your people the story versus, "I'm not your leadership coach, so I probably shouldn't go there." Yeah, but it's great growth by you, I think I could say. You've also done an exceptional job at creating a culture at UMD of real excitement and fervor and, you know, people that are very engaged in their faith walk.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say the same thing across Catholics in America, Catholics in the world, or just in any denomination.
Yeah.
If you had to give credit to why that is, what would it be?
It's a great question. wow. There is, you know, my first inclination is to say we just have really good people. Mm-hmm. We have great students, and I've been working with a group called Focus for the last maybe 10 years or so on campus. It stands for Fellowship of Catholic University Students. And so we every year get at least four young adults who work on campus and serve on campus, and they just reach out and they have great relationships with our students. And it's just so good. And I mean, just you see this transformation. But I knew that when I first got to campus, we had, as an example, they had one mass during the week, and they had about 6 to 10 people show up. And then on Sundays, there was one mass, and there's maybe, say, 30 to 50 people would show up, that kind of thing. And one of the things that I knew is that I couldn't do everything. So I thought, okay, we can do three things. And these are going to be the three things we can do. And because I think these three things will have a significant impact. One is we need to have consistency when it comes to things like the sacraments. So we need to have daily mass and daily confession, because not just kind of sporadically, not just occasionally, but this is going to be part of our culture. And that's when it comes to setting up an environment that was like something that you can rely on every single day. And so every morning we would have like a gathering in the chapel, like we're going to pray. Every evening, here's mass. And before every mass, here's confession. And so just that every day students can know that. So consistency. Secondly, is we know
before you move on,
yeah.
Were you worried no one was going to show up?
Oh yeah, no, not so much, because I'm like, I knew I was going to be there.
So as long as you were there, we're good.
And you know, and also too, I'm so grateful to those that the first couple of years there when we had a couple of students who were like, "Oh really? Yeah, we totally can do this." And they, you know, just
they bought four
of them who were excited, you know, right. Four of them who bought in.
Number two, I got you off track. Number one.
That's good. Super good. I knew that a lot of times here are students who have, for the first time in their lives, they get to make the decision over what they're going to do with regard to their relationship with God, what they're going to do with regard to their faith life. And a lot of people have been raised in a certain denomination or raised in a certain kind of way, but they haven't necessarily had the opportunity to personally choose that. And so either they just kind of keep going along with the stream and they just, okay, we'll just go. Or they unthinkingly just abandon it. It's that kind of sense of like, I don't have to do this anymore. I'll just stop. Well, why? I don't know. Or I'll keep going. Why? I don't know. And so one of the things to help people have an encounter with God and get them out of their normal routine so they can make a decision are retreats. And so I was like, okay, we have this daily thing, but we're also going to build into our academic year a specific number of opportunities students can get away, get off campus, and have the opportunity to, yeah, encounter God in a way they never have in the past. Mm. So that was number two. It was like, we're going to have excellent retreats. And the third thing is I know especially, it's gotten even worse as far as our culture is concerned when it comes to like crises and loneliness and that problem of like being so disconnected. I walk the halls on campus and I mean, I'll find it's late in the semester right now, but I'm guaranteed there's still students who have not made one friend on campus. And so that pain of being, a small fish in a big pond and not having any idea who anyone is and do I have any friends? And so, especially with relationships being so tenuous right now, and so I don't want to say millennials, but there is an element where it comes to iGen and millennials where there's difficulty establishing really solid relationships mm-hmm. that are healthy. And so we thought, okay, the third thing we want to do is we want to have like Bible studies / like small groups, like where I might not be able
connect.
To. Exactly. And I'm not going to, and they can invest in each other's lives. So it's not just, yeah, we show up for 1 hour a week and do this thing, but it's, yeah, they come to the 1 hour a week thing, but then they also on a regular basis, like also hang out and they all with each other and they also get coffee and they also play on the same intramural teams. And that sense of being able to bring it not only helps individuals in relationship, mm-hmm. but it also is a way to bridge the gap between what often is a divide. Here's what I do on Sunday. Here's what I do the rest of the week. And when I have that community that isn't cliquish, because it's like, right, it's a small part of a larger community, part of a larger community, it helps bridge that gap and encourages people, I think, to not live that kind of double life that we're also tempted to live.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. I mean, the idea of unity and connectedness, it can be as powerful, or as there was a research done last year, Father, that basically says that when people aren't connected or feel unified to something, it can be as harmful to our health as food, alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a big deal, which is why so many people are attracted, I think, to social media. But what is the real bonds there
right.
that's actually being formed? And that's where some of the struggle begins to break down when it comes to social media. I want to be respectful of your time, too. One of the questions I ask every guest, which is, you get to leave our audience of leaders with one bit of advice from your life. What would that one bit of advice be?
Man, I should have prepared. Okay. So when I...
If you would have prepared, the answer wouldn't have been as good.
Before I got ordained, the class of men that I got ordained with, we went and had dinner with at the Archbishop of St. Paul at Minneapolis's place. And before dinner, we made what they call a holy hour. So it was just basically an hour of quiet prayer. We prayed together, but silently in the chapel in the presence of Jesus in the Eucharist. And afterwards, he said, men, here's what I want you to do. I want you to do this every day. Now, most of us had already done that 1 hour prayer every day. He said, I want you to do this every day. Here's why. Because in the course of your priesthood, in the course of your being leaders, essentially, serving people, in the course, you're going to make so many decisions in the course of the day, and you're going to do so many things, you're going to say so many things in the course of a day, that if you don't stop and bring that before God, you're just going to have one day roll into the next. And there's going to be many things that you shouldn't have said that you didn't even realize you shouldn't have said. Many things that you should have done, you don't even realize you should have done. But if you take that time and enter into prayer in God's presence, he'll show you, oh, that's where you should have said that thing. And this is where you shouldn't have said. And here's where you should have done. Here's where you shouldn't have done. And he'll show you those things. And I could say that my experience has been that is one of the crucial pieces of of my life or my day is that time away in prayer. It doesn't have to be 60 minutes. That's not a magic number, but enough time to let the like the dust settle and to kind of look around and say, okay, here's what I need to do. I allow myself to be convicted, whether that's being convicted by the Spirit of God or being convicted by your own conscience, to be able to say that time of prayer is absolutely critical.
It's excellent advice. And so in today's busy world, with so much going on and so many things pulling at our attention, taking dedicated time to prayer. I know all of our audience isn't Christians, and that's completely fine too. But the thing is just making sure that that's a part of your day. I mean,
yeah.
And it's very difficult if it's not a habit.
Absolutely.
It's just so hard if it's not a habit. And the last question I want to ask you is what's the most nervous that you've ever been speaking in front of other people, and how did you handle it?
The most nervous I've ever been speaking. See, now I will get oftentimes more interiorly worked up or tense over having to have a difficult conversation.
Mm.
So that's harder for me than it is to get up in front of, 10,000 people.
Right.
That can be exciting because I know what I'm going to say. That's the thing. I know what I'm going to say. But it's the crucial conversations, those difficult conversations where I'm going to start, I have my points, but they also get to respond. And I care about them typically, you have difficult right. conversations with people that you care about or that you have an obligation to, responsibility to. So
it's the difficult conversations.
Difficult conversations, because in front of people, as long as I have an idea of where this is going, I'm good. One thing that makes me more nervous is when I know that there's people who I know and respect who are in the audience or congregation. That's always just like, oh gosh, I hope that they don't hate me.
So if your family's there, you're more nervous.
Yep, it's true. It's true. Family's there because I can't use as many family stories then. And look at me sideways,
Well, Father Mike, we're so thankful you were able to make the time, and we appreciate the work that you do. Your influence on me has been massive, and I can't thank you enough. I want to tell you one more thing, and that is, my brother, being a priest as well, my older brother, with everything that's gone on in the church and as it relates to all the things that have happened with evil men making poor decisions.
Yeah.
I was very sad as a Catholic. I was very sad. And I was most sad for, obviously, the victims.
Yeah.
But very soon after that, I was sad for priests like you and my brother. Right. And I tell you that because I know the commitment that you and my brother and other great priests have made to this profession that is so important in today's time. And it really made me sad that you or any other priest would be looked at differently because of the decisions that some men made. And I just wanted to tell you that to say that I am thankful for your commitment to the priesthood. It's very important and it's very needed. And thank you with all my heart.
That means a lot. Thank you, John. That means a lot.
And I certainly have asked our audience many times, are you committed or are you interested in being a leader?
Yes.
And so I appreciate your commitment.
Amen.
Thanks for joining us on another week of the show. If you like this, do me a favor and share it with a colleague or a friend, or leave a comment, review, and recommendation wherever you listen to podcasts. Anything that would help us spread the message of leadership, it would mean a great deal to me in my heart.